Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 10. Dhruva Maharaja's Fight with the Yakshas. Text 5. Gadvo Dichim Disham Raja. Rujanu Charasevitam. Tadarsha Himavadronyam Purim Guyaka Sankulam. Translation: Dhruva Maharaj went to the northern direction of the Himalayan range. In a valley, he saw a city full of ghostly persons who were followers of Lord Shiva. Please repeat. Dhruva Maharaj went to the northern direction of the Himalayan range. In a valley, he saw a city full of ghostly persons who were followers of Lord Shiva. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, it is stated that the Yakshas are more or less devotees of Lord Shiva. By this indication, the Yakshas may be taken to be the Himalayan tribes like the Tibetans. Translation again. Dhruva Maharaj went to the northern direction of the Himalayan range. In a valley, he saw a city full of ghostly persons who were followers of Lord Shiva. This verse continues the previous verse, Text 4, which says, when Dhruva Maharaj heard of the killing of his brother Uttama by the Yakshas in the Himalaya mountains, being overwhelmed with lamentation and anger, he got on his chariot and went out for victory over the city of the Yakshas, Alakapuri. So Dhruva Maharaj was a most determined person. We saw his determination when he was insulted by his stepmother, Suruchi. Dhruva Maharaj was playing on the lap of his father on the throne, and Suruchi said, how dare you sit on the throne? You are not born of my womb. And the father, out of excessive attachment for his favorite wife, Suruchi, threw Dhruva down from the throne. Rejected him. So Dhruva Maharaj had Kshatriya spirit. He took the insult very much to heart, and he wanted to prevail by getting a kingdom even greater than that of his father, King Uttanapad. So he approached his mother, Suniti, and asked her what to do. And she said that personally she could not help him because Dhruva's father favored his co-wife, Suruchi, over Suniti. So Dhruva Maharaj said, well then how can I get my kingdom? And his mother said, I don't know, but I think only God can help you. He said, where can I find God? She said, well, many sages and saintly persons search for him in the forest, so maybe you can find him there. So Dhruva Maharaj went. He was just a young lad of 5 years, but he was very determined to find God. In his own way, as a child, he was searching in the bushes behind the trees, under rocks. He was very determined to find God. And the Lord, who is within the heart of all living entities, understood the sincerity of purpose of Dhruva. And so he sent a spiritual master to guide him. From within the heart of Narada Muni, he inspired Narada Muni to go to the forest to find Dhruva Maharaj. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita states, Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Beej, by the combined mercy of Guru and Krishna, one gets the seed of devotional service. Or, as it is sometimes said, by the mercy of Krishna one gets Guru, and by the mercy of Guru one gets Krishna. So the Lord sent Narada to instruct Dhruva. Narada, first of all, tested him. He said, you're too young to be searching for God. You're just a child. You should play like other children. You shouldn't take the insult so seriously. After all, we're not the body. We have nothing to do with the pains and pleasures of the body. So just forget about this so-called insult and go back to your home and enjoy your life as a child. And Dhruva Maharaj replied that I am very determined to get my kingdom. And if you are going to tell me to go home, then you can just go home. So Narada Muni understood that the boy is very serious, very determined. Then he instructed him in the process of devotional service, gave him the name of God to chant, and Dhruva followed the instructions very sincerely and seriously, and within a period of 6 months, he was blessed with darshan of the Lord. Lord Narayan himself came to see Dhruva Maharaj. He asked him to take some benedictions, and Dhruva Maharaj refused. And the Lord said, "Well, but what about your kingdom? You were so eager for your kingdom. That's why you came to the forest to search for me." And Dhruva Maharaj replied, "Swamin kritarthosmi varam meyache." That the kingdom that I was seeking was just like a piece of broken glass. And now that I have found you, you are like the most precious jewel. So I'm thousands of times more satisfied. And I do not want any benediction. And Dhruva Maharaja's response is a characteristic of pure devotees. When Lord Vishnu appeared to Prahlad Maharaj, who was also a boy of 5 years, and asked him to accept some benediction, Prahlad also didn't want any benediction. He wanted only to be able to serve the Lord. He wanted only to be blessed that no matter what happens, he will never forget the Lord. And that is the desire of all pure devotees. But sometimes the Lord, for his own reasons, wants the devotee to accept some position of material opulence, not for the sense gratification of the devotee, but for some other purpose, for the devotee's service, or for the glorification of the devotee. But in any case, Dhruva Maharaj was very determined. This is the point, he was very determined. And when he heard that the Yakshas had killed his brother Uttama, as it's mentioned, he was filled with anger, overcome with lamentation, and he developed the determination to avenge his brother's death. And thus it's mentioned in text 4, he got out of his chariot and went out for victory over the city of the Yakshas. And then in this verse it describes that he actually found the city of the Yakshas. And the following verses will explain the battle that ensued between Dhruva and the Yakshas. In relation to the previous verse, we discussed to some extent kopa, anger, and shucha, lamentation. Ravindra Swami Prabhu mentioned briefly amarsha, which is mentioned as vengeance, the synonyms
although it's referred to as envy in the purport. And Ravindra Sarupu said in this case, envy is not being used in a very specific sense of, you know, wanting something that someone else has, but in a more general sense of having bad feelings towards someone or some group of people. Envy in perhaps the most specific sense is the cause of the fall of the living entity in the material world. And he's envious of Krishna. He wants to occupy the position of Krishna. In effect, he wants to become God. And because of that desire, Krishna Bhakti Mukha Bhoga Manchakari, when one then becomes envious of Krishna or inimical towards Krishna, turns away from Krishna and wants to enjoy independent of Krishna, he comes under the control of Maya and is punished, forced to suffer in so many ways. And therefore the way to gain release from suffering is to turn back to Krishna and give up one's envy. So when at one stage in my devotional service in 1971, we were in Surat at the time, and I was perceiving that I was being afflicted by envy, and I didn't like it. It was a big obstacle. It's a big impediment in my chanting, in my relationships with other devotees, in my service in general. And I thought about it deeply. I reasoned that there's really no benefit to being envious, because what do I want? You know, as a devotee, what do I want? I want service. And Krishna is unlimited. Consequently, his service is unlimited. He can engage unlimited numbers of devotees in service, and he can accept unlimited quantities of service. So there's no scarcity of the opportunity to serve, and therefore it's, if someone else has some service, why should I envy him? Why should I want that service? I can have any service. I can also do that service as well. So I had considered the matter and concluded that there was no benefit. It was just a disturbance. But still, it was there. And in general, I was not approaching the Prabhupada with any question unless I was unable to get the answer by any other means. You know, I would chant, I would pray, I would think, I would read Prabhupada's books, I would discuss with other devotees, and only after trying everything else, if I found that I wasn't able to get the answer, then I would approach Srila Prabhupada, and that was the case. But this envy just wasn't going away. I mean, it wasn't constant, but it would raise its ugly head from time to time. So he was taking his massage with his staying in Bhagavai Jariwala's mansion, big house in Surat. And he was just taking the massage and took the opportunity to approach him. And I asked him, what do we do about envy? And Srila Prabhupada responded first by saying, can you think of any reason why you should not be envious? And I had been thinking in those terms. So I said, yes. And there are many reasons. And Srila Prabhupada said, all right. To be envious means you don't like someone. So that not liking should not be directed towards devotees. That not liking should be directed towards demons who are creating havoc in the world. And creating difficulties for devotees. That was the answer. Sometimes we hear that everything can be used for Krishna's service except envy. But in this sense of envy, not liking someone, having bad feelings towards someone, that can be directed towards demons. Anger, we've discussed anger can also be directed towards demons to either chastise them or reform them or both. In the same conversation, incidentally, I asked Srila Prabhupada about hearing when we chant the holy name. How do we hear? Because it was a bit of a struggle. You know, I could perceive that I, as a soul, as a pure consciousness, wanted to hear the holy name, but there was some obstruction, some covering. So somehow I had to figure out how to get the holy name through the covering into my consciousness. And I would chant, you know, chant with some effort when things receive the lotus oil, say, like, oh, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Rama, Rama, Rama. I was trying to get it through. And Srila Prabhupada was sitting in a very relaxed mood, taking his massage. He asked him, so how do I hear the holy name? And he replied very simply, just like I'm hearing you speak. With a very relaxed, no special efforts, just like I'm hearing you speak. Now some people might have difficulty hearing others speak. I mean, unless they're speaking nonsense, being offensive, but otherwise I sort of naturally hear what people say when attentive when they speak. And I was thinking, why Yeah, well, I just hear it just the way I'm hearing you speak. So we can hear people speak, but when we chant the holy name, there's so much resistance. We can hear so much devotee speak about their difficulties, about their hopes, and be very attentive, but when it comes to the holy name, so much resistance, so many other thoughts. But anyway, that was an instruction. But of course, it becomes as you know, we make the effort over a period of time and become free from the darkness. It becomes easier. It is more like that is here. Then I also ask the same little conversation I asked about the eighth verse of the Guru Vastakam. He couldn't get even know about you can't be sitting. What does that mean? I mean, we know the translation of an obeisance to the spiritual master. Very expert in assisting Radha and Krishna in their pastimes. And Srila Prabhupada replied that that is how the author of the song, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, sought his spiritual master. And then he said, is that all right? And he like that, are you satisfied with that answer? I said, yes. Although, over the years, the devotees have had more questions on that topic. But at the time, said, is that all right? I said, yes. Well, anyway, Krishna consciousness is a great adventure. Keep chanting and hearing and serving and preaching, getting more realizations. From many realizations come from struggles. Dhruva Maharaj struggled, but through his struggle, he was determined. He didn't give up his efforts, and through his struggle, he realized God, and he learned so many things about devotional service. And Prabhupada writes that Krishna consciousness should be a thrill at every moment. And as Rupa Vishwaka will mention it, it's like that when you make an effort to chant without offenses. They'll just carry on in a mechanical way, mechanical means a mindless way. You really make an effort. That hearing with attention, that should be a constant effort. Of course, it's primary when we chant japa. But we come in the temple, we offer obeisances to the deities, or to the spiritual master. We say our pranam mantras to the spiritual master. Are we hearing what we're saying, or is our mind somewhere else? We look at the deities, but are we really looking? Are we really beholding their beauty? If someone asks us 10 minutes later, what outfit were the deities wearing? Would we be able to answer? Did we see what they were wearing? Did we appreciate it? Did we see how they were decorated? So, Krishna consciousness means being present in the moment with Krishna. You know, the sound of the holy name, the sound of the prayers that we recite, the form of the deity. I mean, of the five most potent items in devotional service, worshiping the deity with faith and reverence is one of the five items. It's a very powerful process. But again, we should have the feeling, just like with the holy name, we should know it's Krishna personally. But the deity also should have the same feeling, same conviction, that the deity is Krishna himself. He can speak to us. In the story of Shakshi Gopal, which is told in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, how many of you know the story of Shakshi Gopal? And how many don't? I'll tell it. It's brief. So there was an elderly Brahmin in Orissa, the same state, Dhruva Maharaj, who'd call. And he wanted to go on pilgrimage to Vrindavan, the most holy place connected with Lord Krishna's pastimes. And a young Brahmin came forward to assist him on the way. And that's the culture. The younger people serve the elders to their capacity. So he assisted him all the while, and finally they came to Vrindavan, to a very beautiful deity, a large deity, but Nigamata, called Gopal. And the old man became so ecstatic seeing Gopal. Like the fulfillment of his pilgrimage. And he felt deep gratitude towards the young Brahmin. And he told the young Brahmin that, "You have helped me so much. Without your help, I never could have made it. I want to reciprocate. I want you to be related to me. I want to give my daughter to you in marriage." But the young Brahmin said, "I don't need anything in return from you. I was happy just to serve you. It was my duty to serve you." He said, No, I want to have some family relation with you. I want to give you my daughter in marriage." So the younger Brahmin said, "You should not say such things in front of the deity. If you say it in front of the deity, you have to do it. And, you know, marriages should be performed by people of similar qualification. You know, your family is very affluent, and I come from a poor family. Your family is very educated and not educated. Your wife and your son will never agree. So don't say this in front of the deity." But he said, "No, I want to give my daughter to you in marriage." So okay, it was, so they returned to Orissa, and finally the time came. The older Brahmin informed his family of his intention, and his wife became outraged that he could suggest such a relationship. She said, "You know, if you have our daughter marry that, you know, the Brahmins, poor family, uneducated, I'll commit suicide." And his son, the girl's brother, he was like very abusive, speaking terrible things about the young Brahmin, even sort of about the father. But the father was a dilemma. He didn't know what to do. And the young Brahmin returned and said, "You know, you promised in front of the deity. I don't mind. I'm not interested in marrying your daughter as such, but you promised in front of the deity. And if you break the promise you made in front of the deity, it will be very bad for you. Actually, we promise, when we're initiated, we promise before the deity, before the fire, before the spiritual master, before the Vaishnavas. Making a promise is a serious thing. You say you promised in front of the deity. Now, if you don't keep your promise, it will be a big offense. What are you going to do about your promise? I don't care personally, but I'm concerned about you." So the old man explained, you know, the dilemma he was in. So he brought it up again to the son, and he explained his dilemma to the son, and the son said, "Look, I'll tell you what to do. You just say you don't remember. You know, just say you don't remember, and I'll take care of everything else." So the next time, when the young Brahmin came and raised the question, the older Brahmin said, "I don't remember." And just then, the son interjected, "Oh, you gave my father some intoxicant, and you know, you stole all his wealth, and now you're making up this story that he agreed to give my sister to you in marriage. How could he agree to such a proposal? It's ridiculous." Well, the young Brahmin said, "He promised in front of the deity. He promised in front of the deity. He can't take back his word." So the son was an atheist. He said, "Okay, well, if he promised in front of the deity, let the deity come and bear testimony that he promised." And so the son was an atheist. For him, the idea of the deity was like a big deity. And in those days, travel was basically by foot. And then poor Brahmin, you know, there's no way he could carry big deity like that from Vrindavan to Orissa. So, you know, the son issued this, you know, there's no problem. So, they called the townspeople, like, the, you know, it was in front of the townspeople. the son said, you know, if the deity comes, then, you know, I will agree for my sister to to be given them. But otherwise, you know, this young Brahmin, you know, did this and that, you know, you will punish him severely. So the young Brahmin returned to Vrindavan, came before the deity Gopal. He said, Gopal, you remember the old man? He promised his daughter to be in marriage. Yes, I remember. Well, now, you know, because of family pressure, the old Brahmin doesn't want to give his daughter to me. His family says, only if you come in person will they agree. And Gopal said, I'm just a deity. How can I walk? So the young Brahmin said, well, you're talking. If you could talk, why can't you walk? So Gopal said, yes, you have a point there. So he said, all right, I will follow you on two conditions. One is every day you have to feed me some rice. And two, when you're walking, you should not look behind you to see if I'm following you. But you will know from the sound of my ankle bells that I'm following you. So that way they walked all the way to Orissa, to very near the Brahmin's town. And then the young Brahmin could no longer hear the tinkling of the ankle bells. So he turned around, and there was Gopal. And Gopal said, all right, I'm staying here. You've turned around. And so I'm not going any further, I'm staying here. He's very near the town. And so the young Brahmin came, and he called the family and the villagers, and they saw that indeed Gopal had walked from Vrindavan to bear testimony to the promise of the old man. Gave to the young Brahmin. So, if we see the deity as Krishna, who has faith in the deity as Krishna, and treat the deity like Krishna, he will reveal himself as Krishna, just like the holy name. You chant the holy name, with the understanding that the holy name is Krishna, you're attentive to the holy name, just as you would be attentive to Krishna if you were to become a person. So in the same way, if we see the deity as Krishna and are attentive to the deity as if we were serving, you know, the Supreme Lord directly, he'll reveal himself. He can talk to us. Srila Sanatana Goswami also had his deity of Madan Mohan. That was another story. Madan Mohan. I won't tell my story. But, so anyway, this deity, Madan Mohan, wanted to be served by Sanatana Goswami. And Sanatana Goswami said, I'm just a mendicant. I have no home. I have no possessions. I have no facility to worship you properly. You know, whatever little I get in a day, that's what I eat. I won't be able to serve you properly. But Madan Mohan insisted, no, I want to go with you, I want you to serve me. So Sanatana Goswami accepted the deity, and they were residing together near the Yamuna River. Vrindavan. All Siddhartha Goswami would offer the deity was like these balls of chapati dough. And so one day the deity complained that, you know, you're just offering me dry chapatis, you're not even giving me salt with it. Siddhartha Goswami said, "My Lord, I'm really sorry, but I don't have even salt. I told you in the beginning that I wasn't going to be able to serve you properly." Okay. So then, soon thereafter, a large barge carrying a huge shipment of salt to be sold by a rich businessman. The barge got stuck in the sand very near Sanatana Goswami's place of residence. This was all forest. It was all forest. Vrindavan was really a very dense forest. Even, you know, in the last 100 years, it was a very dense forest. Srila Prabhupada had a friend in Vrindavan named Babaji, who he had his house near the Krishna Balarama temple. So anyway, he told some devotees that when he first came to Vrindavan as a young man, you could walk from Raman Reti, where the Krishna Balarama temple is, where his house was, all the way to Govardhan in the middle of the day and never see the light of the sun, but the forest was so dense. That was just not even 100 years ago. So if Vrindavan was a forest, and the owner of the shipment, I believe his name was Mr. Kapoor, he didn't know what to do. The barge was stuck. And he's excitement is just in this forest. So Madan Mohan goes down to the Yamuna and tells Sri Kapoor that there's a Baba up on the hill and he might be able to help you. So Sri Kapoorji came up to Sanatana Goswami and he told him that, you know, my barge is stuck, I've invested so much in salt. Anyway, to make the story a little shorter. So Sanatana Goswami, he went back to the barge and the barge got released from being stuck in the sand. And he took it as the blessings of Sanatana Goswami. So he wanted to do something in return. He knew that Sanatana Goswami had saved him. So he said, "Well, if you want to do something, you can build a temple for Madan Mohan," which he did. So, but even till today, they offer the deity of Madan Mohan those little dry chapati dough balls. So the deity is Krishna. He can talk to you. If you serve in that mood with that love, he can talk to you. And so Srila Prabhupada said like that, that if you see the deity as Krishna, he will manifest himself as Krishna. He will talk to you. And if you see the deity as stone, then for you the deity will remain as stone forever. It's not automatic. It depends on our understanding and our desire to develop our relationship with Krishna. So these two processes go together, Bhagavat Marga, Antratriki, Vidhi, hearing and chanting about Krishna and worshiping the deity. Each is potent in and of itself, and together they're very effective. And I mean, these deities, I mean, all of the deities here, Sadhguru, are very beautiful, very potent. I mean, just like, yeah, it's like the Vrindavan. So if we become mindful of the deities, of Krishna, mindful of the deities, mindful of the holy name, then it will enter. Shrinuta Svakata Krishna Vinishad Sakyaka. Kridanti, it will go in the heart, and all that's inauspicious, abhadra, it will be cleansed. Vidu roti sarinsatam, the Lord, who is within the heart as the well-wisher of the truthful devotee, he will cleanse the desire for material enjoyment from within the heart. Satam, Srila Prabhupada translates as truthful devotee. Sat means truth. Sat also means devotee. So truthful devotee, Srila Prabhupada explains as one who is not duplicitous. One who is sincere about developing his relationship with Krishna, the relationship with Krishna, sincere about devotional service, not making a pretense of devotional service and having some other motivation. So that is truthful devotee. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur emphasized that quality of sarvata, simplicity in a devotee, as opposed to duplicity. So if one is, simple devotee, since without duplicity, truthful devotee, and he engages in hearing the messages of Krishna, Srinivasa, Sakata Krishna, then the Lord, who is the well-wisher of the devotee and is situated in the heart, will cleanse the desire for material enjoyment from within the heart. He'll clear up all the inauspicious things within the heart. We can't do it ourselves, but if we're sincere, and we show our sincerity by our efforts, then Krishna will take up the work. And those, all the inauspicious things in the heart will be removed, and then it'll be more natural, more spontaneous. We can hear. We hear is really Krishna. We see is really Krishna that we're seeing. Our progress becomes smoother and easier and quicker. Up to that stage of an activity is quite a struggle. But still, we continue, we persevere, We have the holy name, we have the Mahadev. We take our chandra, we feel the divine. Holy name is Srimad Bhagavatam, the association of bitterness and loneliness. The steps are taken care of. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Yes?
I see Krishna and I think Krishna is wonderful with how to become a savior and how to change in the heart and the world.
Yes, as you know, so Mahatma says she sees Krishna. She knows that he is Krishna, she sees Krishna, but then sometimes she forgets. Well, that's our tendency to forget. That's why so many of the devotees, when they actually see the Lord, they pray, you know, may I never forget you. Because that's our tendency to forget. So we can pray, just continue the effort to hear without offense, read, hear without offense, with attention. Keep good company of saints. We have faith, we have taste. But there's no secret formula. Pray, keep breathing, keep hearing, keep chanting, keep trying to, give up offenses we can talk to. Serve devotees. Serving devotees also is very purifying.
Also, by the mercy of Krishna, by the mercy of Krishna and the mercy of the Guru, one can obtain go back to Godhead. But from I understand the mercy of Krishna is he sent the Guru and the devotee. But how the mercy of the devotee work? Because for example, we have all the opportunity sometimes to serve the Guru, but not all the devotees who serve the Guru or the pure devotee obtain his mercy, his full mercy. So, and also, if this mercy depend on Krishna or depend only to the devotee? So the Guru have the full full power to give the mercy to the person that he wants, or Krishna is doing something, or the plan of the devotee, the so how is the mercy of the Guru work?
Both. First of all, what Chaitanya Charitamrita says is, you know, Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. By the mercy of Guru and Krishna, one gets the seed of devotional service. But then, one has to become a gardener and take care of the seed. And one has to water it with hearing and chanting about Krishna. And then one has to be careful of weeds, unwanted plants that may grow up alongside the devotional privilege. And if one sees a weed, one has to uproot it. And one should also fence the devotional creeper so that the mad elephant of offense cannot come into one's garden, you know, into the garden of one's heart and destroy the creeper. So the mercy is there, in the instructions that one receives. But you also have to do your part. You have to water the plant, but during the chanting, you have to be vigilant that no weeds should come, and if the weeds come, no material desires are different weeds. But broadly, desires for sense gratification or for mental speculation. If one sees those weeds, one has to take them out, and then one must, you know, fence the creeper. As Srila Prabhupada explains, that putting a fence around the creeper means staying within the circle of pure devotees. If you stay in the circle of pure devotees, then the mad elephant of Vaishnava Parad cannot enter your mind. So there are many things that you have to do. And if you're not, you know, if your devotional creeper is not growing so strong, you can't say that it's because the guru isn't giving you as much mercy as he's giving someone else. You know, his primary mercy is in the instructions he gives, but it's up to you to follow the instructions. The Guru wants to give mercy to everyone. Krishna wants to give mercy. But you have to follow the process. And yes, it's true. When the devotee gives mercy, then the mercy of the Lord follows. But they're both always giving mercy. Therefore it's said, by the mercy of Krishna one gets Guru, by the mercy of Guru one gets Krishna. It's the mercy of Krishna that one gets Guru. Like Dhruva Maharaj, Krishna, within the heart of Narada Muni, sent him to instruct Dhruva. That was Krishna's mercy that he sent Narada. So they want to give mercy, but you know, the primary mercy comes in the form of the instructions. So you have to follow them. At least make the effort to follow them to your best capacity. And just sit around and think, oh, you know, the Guru's not favoring me, so I'm not making progress. The Guru's favoring someone else, so that person's making progress. The Guru is equal to everyone. I mean, yaya tamaha bhakti case. As one surrenders, the Guru will reciprocate, Krishna will reciprocate, but not on the basis of partiality. Anyone can surrender and get that mercy open to everyone. The Guru wants that, Krishna wants that. Do you want it? That's the real question. What is your desire in your heart? Do you really want Krishna? Do you really want to serve Krishna? Or do you stay around in the material world and try to enjoy it more? That's the real question. Not for you, for each and every one of us. Could you understand my English?
Yes.
Do you have anything more to say or ask? Okay. Any other questions or comments? Right, thank you very much. Otherwise, we should look out for you.